This is East Carolina All-American Brian Packard, and we're talking Pirate Baseball and the Sports Objective, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball. ECU play-by-play voice Corey Glure and others will join us as we look back at the previous week and take a look at what's ahead. Now, let's talk Pirate Baseball.
Innings right here on the Sports Objective. Good Sunday night. I'm Dave Richmond. Glad to have you. Next Level Training Center brings us the show each and every week. I want to thank Trent Britt. Appreciate him and Gainell for all that they do and all the great coaches, all those great folks. Appreciate them so, so much. By the way, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there in Pirate Nation and beyond. And I want to send a shout out. One of my best friends, his mother is not doing well. So we pray really hard for her and all the other mothers that are not doing well and folks not doing well right now in Pirate Nation and beyond. With us right now, we have, of course, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you?
What's going on, guys? And I am a mother's son. And happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. What in the hell? Happy Mother's Day to my mom. I went to see her today. We supposed to got to lunch, and she wasn't feeling well, so I just took her some flowers and a gift. So no lunch for our mom today, but good weekend for the Pirates, guys. Could have, you know, you're sitting there 3-1 and you're greedy because you feel like it could be 4-0. So many guys left on base yesterday, and could have made the weekend super special. But glad to get out of there 3-1, particularly with the pitching situation today. Did not expect to see Johnny Holstaff shut down the Tulane Green Waves offense today.
No doubt about it. I want to give a shout out to Bubba Rosenbaum behind the scenes producing. Bubba, appreciate you, buddy, very, very much. And with us right now, the play-by-play voice of the ECU Pirates, the first place Pirates, and that's Corey Glure. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Happy Mother's Day. I, as soon as I left the ballpark, I was on the phone with my mom and my grandmothers and my sister, who's a mom, and getting to talk with them as well. And in line with what Kyle was saying, happy birthday to my friend Rob as well today.
But, that's why you said happy
to everyone out there on Pirate Nation, and what a day this turned out to be.
There are no accidents. That's why, Kyle, exactly why he said happy birthday. He knew your friend Rob, or knew you had a friend named Rob that had a birthday. Mm-hmm. So very excited to be here talking to you tonight, as always. But this week is a lot better than last week, and I think that it goes back to what we say all the time with Pirate Nation, just to be calm, relax. It's a marathon, not a sprint, and here we are again. Last couple weeks, we get the split, but this week, when the chips are down, we're back home. And here's another thing that maybe Pirate Nation, some know and some don't know. We're 27-4 at home. Now, we finish out with a bang for the seniors. We'll talk about that later on, but the fact that we've won 87% of our games, we have a 870 winning percentage at home. I know we're 50-50 on the road. We can talk about that. But, Corey, starting off with you, 27-4, I mean, if you knew that at the beginning of the season, wouldn't you sign on the dotted line if there were a contract, hey, we're going to be 27-4 at home for the 21 campaign?
Oh, if you would have told me 27-4 was coming at home this year, to me, that would have meant, oh, they've let everybody into the ballpark. But that's what stands out to me, too, is that the highest attendance we had for a game this year was yesterday's doubleheader, 1337. That was the number. North Carolina got kind of up there. But with the restrictions in place, it wasn't Clark LeClaire as we know it. But for the folks who were able to get into the building, and Dave, you were there yesterday, but for everyone who was able to get out to these games, whether it was the start of the season when there were only 100 or 200 allowed in, or at the end of the year when 1,300 was the max capacity and maybe a touch more, y'all brought it. Like, you really came through, and there's no question that there were thousands of people that weren't able to get to games this year that desperately wanted to. The folks that did come out and did show out and were able to come out this year, you still made this one of the best home fields in the country, even though, a quarter of the attendance is of what we expect any given day, especially for a weekend like this, was able to come out 27-4 with everything that was going on this year at home. That's a pretty special job.
Corey, this might be a better question for John Gilbert. You talk about the home attendance for baseball this year and, you know, with limited capacity. Have you heard in how we are doing on ESPN Plus for baseball versus other programs? Are our views or streams, you know, right up there, or have you heard talk of that?
I have not heard about any of that, nor have I heard about our numbers on the radio side, but I know just hearing from people how many folks are tuning in to both of those broadcasts, and thank you. I think they anticipated they would be pretty strong this year if the team was going to be good, and the team's been great. So knowing that they weren't going to be able to get everybody in there for this season, they put out a product that at least gets the games out to you and do it at a pretty high level. And then, you know, when we're on the road and like last weekend when games aren't televised, they were able to give the thumbs up for me to go out there and still do those games. So I don't have the numbers. I'm sure they're pretty sizable from everything that I've heard so far.
And I got two more Brock athletic questions for you before we get back into the games. Can you, and again, this might not be a question for you, when the games aren't on ESPN Plus and they're televised on ECUPirates.com, why the limited cameras when that wasn't the case last year? When the games were only on ECUPirates.com, we have one. We're back to the one hard camera for ECUPirates.com games, like it was several years ago. And then the other question is, why do they use your broadcast on some of the ESPN Plus games, and then sometimes they bring in other announcers?
I'll give you the first one first, and that is a resource situation because the cameras are set up by and large to do, you know, the four camera operation that you see on the television broadcast. It's also about the staffing of it. And so when games have been on ECUPirates.com this year, there's another ECU sport that is on ESPN Plus. So this weekend it was softball that had that Saturday slot on ESPN Plus. And that's where staff was going to for that broadcast. Hence why one camera operation for baseball. The cameras are set up. It's also about the people running it. And so that's what that led to this year. I don't think that this is I can't speak for the video production department, but I think they see this as a one season sort of deal with all the stacking of sports this year and needing to get some of these games on ESPN Plus from the other sports, softball, volleyball, soccer, all of that stuff. And so they would move people around, and that led to the one camera setups for the website games. I don't envision that's going to be a long-term thing. As far as the other question, that I can't really give you an answer to. There are days I'd walk in, they say we're using your feed. Days I walk in, there's another team there like today. So that I don't have any sort of input to give, nor did I have any sort of input in that discussion.
Okay.
There. Kelly Denise says, hi, Corey. Great call this weekend.
That's my sister. Happy Mother's Day, Kelly. I just signed off a FaceTime chat with her about 15 minutes ago to jump on with you gentlemen here. So, hi, Kelly.
Happy Mother's Day. Well,
we should have Kelly on sometime with stories of the youth of Corey Glore.
That would be a horrible idea.
I think it'd be a great idea.
Fair Paul Corey back at it again, Ben Byron says, of course, from Facebook.
That's kind of our lead producer on the Pirate Sports Network right there and studio host. He had himself a long couple of days Friday and Saturday. Good to see he's bounced back.
Yeah, you guys have had a lot of caffeine with you and Coach O. Speaking of production, I know there was the folks that graduated this, I guess it was Friday. I want to give them a shout out to all the people.
Brandon Shapiro.
Brandon Shapiro.
Yeah, speaking of graduates, get my boy Shapiro. Just graduated from East Carolina. Friend of the Sports Objective, has helped us out many times. A pseudo team member, and I didn't mean to step on your congratulations of the guys. You know, they helped produce the games for ECU, but our boy Brennan, congratulations.
He's worked very hard and behind the scenes, like you said, helping us out with going to practices, getting audio, a whole bunch of stuff. So thank you, Brennan, for that very much. As far as Can you talk about the I know there's a big production studio. I know you maybe want to talk about that, but I don't think people understand that when people are asking a lot of questions about ecpirates.com and they're making, you know, ESPN Plus, they don't realize how much goes into a broadcast, not only for your sake for radio, but when you're talking about the ecpirates.com or ESPN Plus, there's a lot that goes into it. It's not like you just turn on a switch. And I know maybe I'm not trying to talk down to people, and I haven't been in the production studio, but I am, like, I've seen pictures and stuff of what it looks like. So it takes a lot of people to handle that, right?
Yeah, and you have background in this world too, Dave. You know kind of behind the scenes what it takes to get something that does sound like you turn a switch on and you go, how much work actually plays into that. And for the first year of this operation for East Carolina, and the conference and ESPN actually amended some things because of all the sports that piled into spring this year. So they were able to at times take our broadcast. I think it was 11 games. They used our broadcast on the ESPN feed. They brought in broadcasters elsewhere. There's a hefty operation that's in play to put this together. And they would love to not do the single camera setup for ecupirates.com. Ideally, they'd love to just get all these games on ESPN Plus, but with what they have to manage for this spring season, that just wasn't going to be in the cards. I think if fans were upset at all about the school website version of some of the games this year, understand that, you know, where we just were last weekend, they put one of four games on television in Wichita State. Right. Like, it, you know, East Carolina made sure they did everything possible to make sure every single home game was viewable for fans, because they knew, like how we started, not everyone is going to make it to the ballpark this year fan-wise. So, this was a challenging year for this crew, for this being the first year of this deal. They had to manage a lot, and by and large, they did a pretty bang-up job with it.
No doubt, and we just like you were talking about, you have all the fall sports have been pushed back to the spring, which that probably will never, well, I say that, but more than likely in our lifetime, let's say it that way.
Knock on wood, yes.
Hopefully, yes. That we won't have to worry about that, where, in other words, the number of personnel is spread very thin that way. The very first year that you're doing it, they're only going to get better. We can put more resources in it. Maybe we can have more students to help us there, the comm majors and stuff, and video and audio production and that sort of thing. So that I want to give a shout out to our good friend Patrick Johnson. Did a great job today on I'm one of those weird people. I listen to you and Coach O, and I'm also trying to take care of the broadcast as well on ESPN Plus. Jake Jacobs, former pitcher for the Pirates under Coach O, did an excellent job on ESPN Plus. And I know William Grant, Bubba Grant, mentioned that on a comment. So I wanted to give him a shout out. We're giving lots of shout outs tonight. But, you know, you think about it too, Corey. There you. Thank you, Bubba, very much. Thank you, Bubba Grant, the other Bubba, and Pirate Nation too. You think about it too, Corey, how far this program has come as far as audio with radio. We have newspaper, we have internet, we have, message boards, we have podcasts that following this program now with baseball. And so we just need to relax on a lot of this stuff, because all in all, our Pirates are winning and we're in first place again. We talk about baseball now, but I was really happy, first of all, again, Gavin Williams, man, I've been following him since he was a recruit, and we found out, and just his velocity, it had my interest up with, you know, 100 miles an hour, 96 miles an hour. I'm like, he's coming to East Carolina, a local kid pretty much. I think the Fayetteville area, Cumberland County, and he comes here, and he's had some trouble, obviously, with some injuries. But overall, and then, of course, the COVID year last year. And that guy, let's talk about Friday, that guy's throwing out of his mind. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I think if there's another thing that I want to say about this team, because of the shortened season last year and maybe the broadcaster Corey Glore, it seems like everybody's hungry right now because of not having all those games last year.
Especially for the guys that, you know, we're going to talk about senior day people here, I would imagine, in a second. Yeah, but sure. There's a different energy to that group this year, and Gavin is at the front of that list where he was so close to getting a start last year and then everything stopped. And then he starts this year with an injury, so he's delayed to start this. And listen, this series was being talked about by many people about what was in play here. And Friday's game in particular was being focused in on, especially when it became the lone game that day. There wasn't a doubleheader anymore. And so it became two of the best pitchers in the country facing off. And, you know, Matt Bridges said after the game today, it was impossible to not hear some of the stuff that was happening leading into this series. And that game was drawing so many eyes from around the country. And for Gavin to just go out there and deal like he did, even when things were going very differently on the other side of the equation, the Pirates were getting to Braden Olthoff. He just kept his wits about him, and he was just able to knife his way through that lineup like he's done with every lineup so far this year. He's otherworldly what he's done this year, and he's not the throw the 100-mile-per-hour fastball guy anymore. He hit 98 on Friday. That's the fastest he's thrown this year. He was very ready for that game and very amped up for that game because he heard all the talk. He knew what that series was about. He knew what that game was, and there were 30-plus scouts watching that game on Friday afternoon. There, it was standing room only in the concourse there in the scouting section for a couple big reasons, and he came out the better in many different ways and led his team to a win, like he's done every time out.
And that's when you're the ace of the staff. That's what you expect, right? I mean, you can't have a guy that's only subpar or par. You got to have a guy that's like what we're talking about. He's throwing out of his mind. This is, and I think that we were talking about we'll talk about the seniors in just a minute. They know that the seniors in particular knew today when they walked off, that's the last regular season game they'll ever pitch in front of Clark LeClair. And we hope that we'll talk about later on in the show about the regionals and maybe a super regional, hopefully, at Clark LeClair. But we know that's the last regular season game that they'll ever pitch. And for Gavin, that would be the last, I would assume that's the last pitch he's ever going to throw for regular season game. He'll be drafted pretty high unless things, who knows what will happen. But I think it's pretty safe to say that he's going to do very well.
There's a reason why he was one of the senior day honorees because he has another year of eligibility, but he's not going to be using it. It's safe to say. And with what he's done this year, I mean, he's going to get a call on the first day of the draft. However they structure the draft this year, I know it's 20 rounds. I don't know what they're doing day one, day two, but he's one of the best pitchers in the country. And he was opposing one of the best pitchers in the country on Friday. And, you know, at times we make a lot out of the pitching matchup as a story when it comes to this sport at any level, college or otherwise. But that was the headline for Friday. And he, in so many ways, was the better of the guy opposing him. And that speaks volumes to people who will be calling him next month and to what he does moving forward. We knew everything that he was capable of doing, and it is so much fun to watch it come together in a way that even still exceeds my expectation for him. You mentioned, you know, you want this stuff from your ace. You're getting unbelievable stuff from your ace right now. You're getting scary stuff from your ace. There's only been one game where it's felt like he actually had to battle through when stuff wasn't quite there. That was against Memphis a few weeks ago. He had two pitches working, but he still carved his way through that lineup. Since then, his last three outings, he has had everything working. And that's frightening because there hasn't been a moment yet where he has looked uncomfortable. There hasn't been a moment yet where he has looked out of sorts, where a situation's catching up to him. He's just been sensational. He's top five in the nation in ERA, and it's not just a small sample size, not just a fluke. He's one of the best pitchers going in the country.
Corey, you look at that game Friday, and on the offensive side of things, they stayed focused the whole game. They just kept layering it, piling it on more runs each in. And I thought eventually we might even 10-run rule them, but that didn't happen. But it was great to see the focus and the aggression through the whole ball game.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they had a plan against Olthoff, and both coaches, you know, sometimes we can make a lot of, and I'm guilty of this too, well, the Pirates really knocked out Braden Olthoff and made him look mediocre there. But both coaches after that game said that wasn't the same sharp pitcher that, frankly, we had seen before in Old Town. He was leaving everything up, and the Pirates are going to hit things that are left up, especially off speed, which is what his forte is. And so they were able to really get to him, knock him out in the fourth. But the key, as you mentioned, Kyle, was there have been games in the past where they get to a starter early, and then suddenly they just kind of ease up a little bit, and a bullpen arm comes in. And it can be an adjustment to see an arm out of the bullpen faster than maybe you were expecting. But they just kept going, and they kept attacking, and they scored in the final five innings of that game to put that game away. You're right. They were locked in from the very beginning of that series. Again, it was impossible to ignore this series and what was on the line here, and they came out with their best foot forward on Friday and played one of their best games of the year that I think was bettered by a game we'll talk about here in a little bit.
No doubt about it. One of the things that's been a concern, I know, for Pirate Nation is that, let's say, for this particular game, game one, we come out, we score 12 runs. And how would they react to the second game? Even though it wasn't a doubleheader, like the second game was the first game of the doubleheader on Saturday, how would they respond offensively? We saw that in the Elon series, other series, where they come out like gamebusters the first game, and they score a whole bunch of runs. The second game, you know, it's like there's no offense. So Friday started out great and started off the series great. What were your final takeaways for Friday that maybe we missed?
Well, I think you hit on a key thing there. If that were the front end of a doubleheader on Friday, I don't know how they would have looked for game two, because they have had troubles with game twos of doubleheaders this year in conference wins or losses. Now they've lost three in a row of these, but I think they were so geared up and locked in for that first game and knowing who was on the mound for Tulane there, that I think it would have been natural to almost have a letdown had they had to swing around and play a game right after that. And so I think there became a benefit of having to play the doubleheader on Saturday rather than Friday this time around. That might change when we go to Cincinnati, and hopefully things stay status quo for the weekend in terms of playing two on Friday. But I think the fact that they had that performance on Friday and then didn't have to clear it out, they got a night to kind of, push it out of their system and then gear up for two games on Saturday. I think that was a big benefit this weekend.
No doubt about it. I want to give a shout out to Pirate Al, who was there at the game yesterday when I was there. And he said the right term. So that's why I'm going to give him credit. The Pirates set the tone in game one.
Yes.
And I think that's true. They, we knew this series coming in, it was going to be a heavyweight fight. And I think they went ahead and just, instead of playing around with Tulane, they went ahead. And I don't know if it was necessarily a knockout early, because it wasn't, like Kyle said, a 10-run rule, but you pretty much knew or had a good idea who was going to win the ball game. I thought they did a nice job. Another thing is, like we were talking about, the middle innings, and then they pretty much finished off the team, which that's what you want in the month of May, right?
Yeah, you kind of figured that the three games following that opener, prior to a pitch being thrown, that opening game was 1,000% up for grabs. Like, just, you expected a pitcher's duel in that game, and you didn't get it. And so that really changed the complexion of that series. And, the final three games, or the two games of the doubleheader, I would say, were a lot like what I thought this series was going to look like. Friday was not. And that was, I think, maybe a bit of a shock to Tulane's system when they suddenly couldn't rely on their guy and they had to go into their bullpen early on. And the Pirates took advantage of it. Saturday, they got their feet back underneath them and created two crazy games. And then today, to finish it off, the Pirates just came out with a purpose and they finished off this series. But you're right. That Friday game was such a surprise, I think, to Tulane, that it completely sent the message across to the other side of the field about just what was maybe in play this weekend.
Corey, you mentioned how Saturday was more like we expected the series to be. Super competitive. The games were so long Saturday and so competitive, and so many things happened. To be honest with you, besides knowing we won game one of the doubleheader and they won game two of the doubleheader, I have trouble remembering game one from game two, what happened in which. They blur together to me. I'm trying to remember, like, Did this happen in the first half of the doubleheader? Did this happen in the second half? It's a blur.
That doubleheader that's the most intense doubleheader I've ever seen. Like, it just felt like the very first pitch to the very last pitch was just riddled with tension. And to sustain that for 8 hours, I walked out of that beat. My job is not nearly as grueling as what these guys do. You know, I'm calling what they do. But after walking out on Saturday, I was wiped out. And, like, that doubleheader was nuts. Like, and you're right. I have game one of that doubleheader open in front of me in my book right here, my scorebook. And I'm looking at some of the things here. I'm like, okay, Norby hit a home run in the eighth inning. That kind of put the game away. The Pirates got two runs in the seventh by Moylan, RBI single. But I don't remember that. That's kind of what that doubleheader was. The one thing I vividly recall from that doubleheader was the bad thing that happened at the end of game two of that doubleheader, the Ethan Groff home run, because that's the longest home run I've ever seen hit at Clark O'Clair Stadium. But that those nine innings in game one, those nine innings of game two, you're right, they are just a blur. And the folks that were there to witness those games, like Dave, you were, those fans were locked in from the start too. Yeah. To be able to sustain that all the way through, that was special. That environment was great. Those games were great, and I barely remember a single solitary thing about them.
You know what's great about Pirate Nation is the very fact that, just imagine if we had, obviously we can't, but imagine if we had 5,000 people there. I mean, that crowd yesterday when I was there was really loud, very into it. It sounded like it was a packed house. So I was just like, I can't imagine. I feel like this week we'll get awarded at least one of the 20 in contention for regional. I was just thinking, man, if we can have 5,000 people, a lot of people that have never seen a game so far this season, that place is going to be beyond. I don't even know, electric is probably not even fair enough for what the atmosphere is going to be like.
I mean, I got chills, frankly, thinking about what Saturday was just environment-wise. And it was truly awesome. It's the North Carolina game kind of felt like that with the crowd that were able to get in there. And then this weekend felt like that. And it's a shame that that's the last weekend of the season until hopefully regional play here. But that's the nature of the beast this season, but I cannot commend the fans enough for those who are able to get out there this weekend and just brought it. And they could tell, the players could tell, the players were behind it. They would at times get way too emotional because of the environment that was surrounding them, and they had to dial it back a little bit because they were trying to match Tulane a little bit in that regard, and that's just not quite their game. And listen, that's no slouch from what we've seen conference play either. I thought the crowds during league play this year have been really, really good. But this weekend was a different level, and that, you can say what you want. It could be cliche about just kind of pushing teams to victories there, but I can tell you this for sure. The crowd, especially Saturday, just kept those guys going when they were trying to finish off game one or trying to come back late in game two. They were there the entire way.
No question about it. And that's what we're going to need, obviously, when not to overlook, we'll talk about the two series coming up. But as far as the regional is concerned, when you look at 27-4, you're winning 87% of your games. That bodes well. I was thinking about this afternoon. I said, somehow they can win today. They'll be obviously first place. You have the Pirates most likely will be hosting a regional, especially if they win the regular season. They have a good shot to win that. They have a good shot to win the tournament. I mean, everything is right in front of them still. But I was just thinking about if you have 5,000 fans, according to the governor, June 1st, we can go to 100%, right? I mean, so, and then we won't have to worry about social distancing anymore. So I'm hoping that we'll take advantage of that June 4th if we are awarded a regional. I'm trying really hard to be humble here, but I feel like we will get one of those, because they know that without a doubt, that if we have 100% in there, there's going to be 5,000. There'll be people outside the stadium, I imagine, trying to get in. And that's a great problem to have. There's a lot of programs around this country that would love to have the support that our school has.
Well, here's where, you know, we're trending in the right direction. And you're right. The governor has said June 1, he's eyeing down lifting a lot of restrictions. But the NCAA has come out and they're probably going to try and cap all regionals at 50%, which is a shame because you look at some of the schools that are currently wide open and states that are wide open and, you know, for better or worse, the Mississippi schools, the Texas schools are all, you know, the Florida schools are all open for everybody. If sites are going to still be held on campuses rather than neutral sites, like the basketball tournament was, not abiding by the state guidelines and abiding by your own, I don't know how I feel about that. But then again, it's the NCAA, so I don't know how I feel about a lot of what they do. But even 50%, which I think right now the games have been slightly under 50% technically for seated capacity at Clark LeClaire. If they sound anything like this weekend, and they assuredly will, and even more so because of what will be in play come regional weekend, then even though it won't be 1,000% filled, it's still going to sound the way it should sound.
Guys, no, I want to go ahead. My internet connection has been I think I got lag. My internet connection has been terrible. I got lag now. Just want to tell Verizon they can kiss my ass. But I did want to. If I missed all this, I apologize. Have we already got done talking about game 2 and 3? If we have, I'll just move past.
Not really.
Just touched on them.
Okay, game 2 of the doubleheader. Corey, we got down in that one, or we didn't get. We Tulane cut it to the lead. We expanded it to 4. They cut into it again. They cut it down to 2. You know, we managed to get out of the inning when it looked like it could be worse. We hit a solo shot, if I remember right, get the lead back to 3, 7-4, and managed to get out of there with the victory.
Yeah, that was they fell behind early in the third, and then they put up 4 right in the bottom half. And the series kind of underlying storyline amidst the whole thing was every time Tulane scored, by and large, the Pirates had an answer. And that was a theme in game 2 of the series in the first game of the double, was that Tulane got their first lead in the third inning. And then there the Pirates were to answer right back. And then they just kept on holding things off until late. They built on their lead. They got the 2 runs in the 7th, the solo shot by Norby in the 8th to finish out the game and assured that they weren't losing this series, which to me was the barometer for, you know, many people were asking me about with the host sites coming up this week, and you've touched on it already, Dave, what was in play for the weekend in terms of assuring that the Pirates are in the group of 20 here. A split was what I said. Like, if they split, they're fine, and they did one better than that. So the fact that they were able to take care of that right away on Saturday, to me, was a huge deal.
Yeah, split, you're right. I think we would have been one of the 20, but, you know, I kind of wondered if we split, it would have been hard to win the conference depending on what Tulane does down the stretch.
Yes, totally.
So I think taking 3 out of 4 puts us in first place as long as we handle our business. You know, realistically, I think we can go 3-1 the next 2 weekends. And most likely, unless Tulane catches fire, we'll win the league.
It is a lot harder than I think people realize to make up a game and a half with 8 games to play. And so that could have been what the Pirates are facing had they not won today. And they're playing on the road to finish out the year. Tulane has 1 at home, 1 on the road. So the fact that, yeah, it's a half-game lead, it can switch on a dime here, but the fact that now you're playing from in front and you are not in a situation where you have to catch and pass Tulane due to the 1 game dropped off a 2-lane schedule, now you can actually set the stage a little bit on your own terms rather than hoping that UCF comes through for you this coming weekend or Cincinnati comes through the next weekend. You take care of your business and you'll win the title.
That's right. It's in your own hands. You don't have to get help from anybody. We got a comment there.
Yeah. This is from my good buddy, Blair Bagley, a great Pirate. He said, do you guys know anything about the Tulane players talking trash to Coach Palumbo? Sorry if it was discussed before I joined the podcast. No, Blair, we have not talked about that. I didn't know anything about it. So do you know anything, Corey?
I heard about it. This was Cliff mentioned it in our post-game chat after the doubleheader Saturday that apparently some of the players near the dugout or in the Tulane dugout were yapping at Jeff Palumbo in the first base box. I don't know what was being said. I talked to Jeff before the game today, but we didn't talk about that or anything like that. So no, that was a common refrain I was hearing from some of the folks, and that Tulane was being rather vocal throughout the course of the series. And there were times where the Pirates would get caught up in that and try and return serve. And that led to warnings, that led to, you know, umpires doing, frankly, I thought they did a good job of keeping the temperature as down as they could for this series. And an ejection happened in that first game of the doubleheader as well. The hitting coach for Tulane got ejected. So I don't know what was said, but I knew that something was going on throughout the weekend. And frankly, that's something that I knew was going on with Tulane prior to this series. That has been a common theme I've heard from other folks about Tulane being very, very confident about what they are and who they are.
Well, that's fine if they are, but
that's
we're
fine,
Pirates.
Man.
David,
I'm sorry, we've got lags there. To me, it's good. To me,
yeah. I have no problem with, like, sorry to cut you off, Kyle, but there were plenty of bat flips and viewing home runs this weekend on both sides. I mean, there was one home run hit by Tulane, but the Pirates certainly took a long look at some of the home runs that they hit. I have no problem with that. I'm never an unwritten rules fan. Like, they're unwritten for a reason. But if the dugout is yapping at a coach, or if a player on base is yelling at a coach or a defender's yelling at a coach, I don't know what the gain is there. I don't know what you're trying to do. If you want to enjoy what you're doing and have fun, well, go for it. But if you're trying to get into the head of a coach, I don't know what the mission is that you're trying to enact there.
No doubt about it.
We
got several comments. We'll get to Kyle, and then we'll get back to you. Richard Allsburg, great weekend.
Well, wait a minute. Let me hold off on the comments here because I'm getting lag and stuff screwing up. So let me get this out because it's relevant to the conversation. What this conference lacks is rivalries. And to me, when you have people talking trash back and forth and stuff going back and forth from dugout to dugout, from players to coaches, from players to players, it is what it is when it's on the diamond. As long as it don't get too far and nothing gets physical. To me, it's good. To me, what college sports is supposed to be is rivalries. But because of the almighty dollar, we don't have regional rivals anymore. So you got to kind of create your own. And I think East Carolina and Tulane has a nice little baseball rivalry going, and hopefully it'll continue to grow.
Yeah, I was talking to some of the Tulane people about it this weekend, about how when these two meet, it tends to be a little bit higher up in terms of intensity. When either of these two meets Houston, it tends to have the same sort of feel as well. And recently, kind of when UCF has been involved, it has had a little bit of an extra tempo to it. But you're right. I love the fact that there was an extra layer on top of this weekend here. It's not just the standings at play. It's not just these are the two best teams in the conference. But these two teams know they're good. And so you saw that play out many times over the course of the weekend. I'm 1,000% with you on that, Kyle. This conference absolutely needs more stuff like this. This was the highlight weekend for American Conference Baseball here at Clark Eclair. And so seeing some of this stuff play out, I think it's really entertaining, no question about it.
Well, my problem with it, I will say this, and we'll get to our comments. I don't have a problem necessarily with that, but I always tell my son, do like what the Pirates did today. We'll talk about that in a second, but let your talking and chirping or trash talking do that with your performance, because he was asking about that, a different sport with basketball with a lot of trash talking. And I agree with the rivalry part, but it can lead to what if, let's say hypothetically, Gavin could be on the mound and somebody attacks him and he's out for the rest of the season. There's a lot of bad things that also
Gavin better learn how to fight.
Well,
I know, but he's a pitcher, so that's his arm.
here's my response to that. I think there are times and places and situations for all of what we're talking about. Admiring your home run, if you hit it 800 feet like Ethan Groff did, admire it. Like, I mean, take a long look at that bad boy. Connor Norby looked at his home runs for a while. Alek Makarevich looked at his home run quite a bit today. Like, enjoy that. Do that all you want. Like, there's no issue with that. What you don't get in college baseball, and you never will get in college baseball, are people throwing at other people. Like, that's not going to happen. These games, they're one of 56 on a regular season. They're not one of 162. And so there's more at play here each and every game. And especially the last game of a series like this, where, you know, it was just a question of who could throw the ball by this point heading into the game today. Neither side is going to be going down that path. And so that's where I thought where things were this weekend was great in terms of the level of play and the level of passion that these two teams showed. More of this, please, because this was really, really fun to watch.
All right, now we have the comments.
And that's to answer your question about Gavin. He watched video of Nolan Ryan versus Robin Ventura.
Okay, that sounds good.
Just throw with the left, not with the right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly. Not do anything of that right hand.
Let's do the comments now so we can get there. We have Richard Allsburg says, great work this weekend for the bullpen. Today was exceptional.
Today was their best game of the year. I mean, today to me was, with everything coming into the day today, what they could be had they won, and with how there was so little available pitching-wise, today was unbelievable. I mean, this was a special game that they put out today. They knew Carson was going to be able to go. They knew he wasn't going to be able to go far. And then the second you go into the bullpen, all right, Wilson gives up a hit, and so you pull him out. But then Beal gets hurt two pitches in. And then that sets the whole thing off. And so now suddenly you are in such scramble mode, but you bring in Groves, he gets the job done. Logish comes in, gets the job done. And then for Carter Spivey to bounce back the way he did today, his outing at Wichita State was brutal. And for him to do what he did, he's as big a reason as anybody why the Pirates won this series. Because if he is unable to go into his third inning and keep Tulane off the board, then we're talking about a split. Like, it, Carter Spivey was the guy today. And it's great to see, because this team has been waiting for this from him. And to do it after the worst outing he maybe has ever had last week, that's nail stuff from Carter Spivey today. I mean, the bullpen today, to get to the six-year seniors who were pitching in either the third consecutive day or their third consecutive game, to finish off that game, they were otherworldly. Like, and you're going to need these guys in postseason at some point. For them to do what they did in the biggest game of the year, this is one that Cliff Godwin and this team is going to remember.
No question about it. Especially, we have the Kyle Lag Barber here, but as far as the – you're talking about the pitching and Carter Spivey. That was one player I want to mention. I've been pulling so hard for him individually, because I know he's a good guy. I don't know him personally, but know he's a good guy. Know he's obviously, to be on the team, you have to have great grades, great off the field stuff, obviously with community service. But we know that he has talent, and he didn't have his best performance. I was like, man, if he could just have a good, you know, a good game or some good innings today, and it was great to see him perform very well. This is the best that he's pitched in a while. And he was one of the players that I mentioned, that he's one of the ones we desperately need if we're going to go deep into June.
100% agree with you. And hopefully this is the start of that, because, you know, when I walked into the ballpark today, and the question that I was talking about with people in the press box, and you know, I was talking to Tulane's people, and they're like, who's going to pitch after Wisenhunt? And, you know, I'm looking at my list of who's available, and some of the guys that tried to be available today, like Gavin Williams wanted to pitch today. And he's like, no, don't, we're not going to throw you, that sort of thing. But you're looking at the names and you see Spivey on my list. I'm like, he's going to have an opportunity here to bounce back from what happened last week at Wichita State. And he did, and he got it. He came in, let's see, he comes in when the game is 3-1, I think, if I have this read correctly. Yeah, 3-1 is when he comes in. And to just shut the door, and the Pirate offense went to work. I mean, it's truly awesome what he was able to do. And I hope there's more of that in him, because this team thinks there's more of that in him, and he thinks there's more of that in him. He picked a great time for the best outing he's had at the Pirate.
Yeah, exactly. I did not expect that today, to be honest. When Wisenhunt went out, I thought, all right, we're going to have to score a lot more runs, and we did. But we didn't have to, it turns out. Yeah. The pitching was phenomenal and unexpected, and I don't even know how to explain it. I mean, it, like you touched on it, Corey. I mean, it is – all those guys would be commended. You know, Matt Bridges, Cam Colmore, they were warriors this weekend. I mean, it was awesome to see the staff come together like that and everybody go out and I mean, really just it was a group effort, and we needed every one of those guys.
Yes.
Every one of those guys had to go out there and throw and pitch well. And, you know, thankfully we got some runs to kind of put some distance between you know, us and them, but, you know, for a while there, it was a really close ball game until the late innings.
Yeah, it's, you know, you're put behind the eight ball there in the fourth when Beal goes down with an injury. It was a cut on his hand, and they couldn't close it, and so they said, you can't go anymore. And suddenly, not only do you have to go to another true freshman quicker than you were expecting there in Josh Gross, he walks into an at-bat, which he's never had to do, and then he was able to just kind of settle down. He winds up giving up the hit that scores the run in that inning. But after that, just he was able to stabilize, get out of that inning. And then the next inning, well, he hits the first batter. In comes Logish to clean that up. And he's able to settle things down. Well, he leaves in the middle of an at-bat. In comes Spivey. And then he does what he did. The depth of this team, we've talked about it all year long and before the year, has been touted as the pitching staff, and there have been moments over the last month in which that just has not looked the case, and especially when the Pirates have needed a spot starter in place of an injured Carson Wisenhunt. Well,
yeah,
Wisenhunt gave you three innings here today, and he returns, and he looked good, and that's great to see, and the Pirates will certainly need him moving forward. But the deep guys on this bullpen, the guys that you're going to in blowout situations and non-stressful situations, you put them in when you need them the most in the biggest game of the season, and they had their best outings of the year collectively. It's that's the type of performance that had so many people thrilled about what could loom on the horizon for this team heading in. It's what the bullpen did today that really showed it off.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's just a mental thing. With Wisenhunt being able to start. And you know, even though he only went three innings, none of those guys had to start. They were able to come in where they're used to off the bench. And sometimes you just get that – you're not used to starting, and you come in and you get that starting nod, and it's just too much on your brain.
There's a little bit of a different bounce to this team when Wisenhunt's pitching. Like, and they have it when Gavin's pitching as well. It's not saying that they don't for other pitchers, but there's just something about when Carson's on the mound, when you can tell he's in firm command of the situation, and he's a second year guy and he has that ability already, that even when he leaves a game, that energy's still there, that mentality's still there, just a little bit of a, you know, there's a strong confidence to Carson Wisenhunt, and that bleeds out to the rest of the team. So, and that comes out when guys are coming in behind him here as well. AJ Wilson threw the best he has as a Pirate this weekend. He was terrific in the nightcap Saturday. And then today, I thought he was good. And then the guys just following suit. We talked a lot about how when things have gone wrong for the bullpen, it just snowballs from pitcher to pitcher to pitcher. Well, when things are going right, it's just guys are coming in saying, all right, you did your job. I'm going to back you up here and do my job as well. And that's what today was. It wasn't an avalanche falling. It was just guys doing their part, doing their role, and picking up where the previous guy left off.
Well, two of the let's get that stat up there. Matt Bridges and Cam Colmore appearing in three games each and delivered 7.1 innings pitch of shutout baseball, and no doubt about it, those two guys, my gosh, thankfully we were able to have them. Can we have them for a seventh and eighth year? I know I'm pushing it. I know I'm greedy, but
I'll say this. When I was walking out of the ballpark Friday, I ran into Matt outside the ballpark, and his family was in town. It was a senior weekend, so obviously they were going to be there. And I've known Matt since I started here.
Right.
So 2016 was my first year, and Cam was the same thing. Oh, Cam wasn't as big a part of the 2016 team as Matt was, but it, like, Matt's mom wanted a picture taken with, you know, myself and Matt and Coach O, and Cam was there as well. He got in the picture, and it hit me then, like, oh, this is their final weekend playing ball here at Clark O'Clair, postseason notwithstanding. And I've watched these guys grow up into what they are now. And so it did kind of hit me a little bit, where, like, I've seen these guys walk in as wide-eyed freshmen, and now look at what they are and what they did this weekend when they had nothing left in the tank. But they walked in today and they said, if you need me, put me out there. And it took some convincing for Cliff Godwin to get them out there. No question about it. Garrett Saylor was ready to come in. He was warming up in the bullpen. He did the same thing. We talked about Gavin Williams wanting to do the same thing. Their contributions to this program are going to be hard to duplicate, because everything that they've done, everything that they've gone through, and now what they are as leaders for this team and leading this team into what could be a great run in June, they're going to go down for a while as to what they've done here for East Carolina baseball.
Think about all the regionals they've been to. Yeah, two super regionals already, and they still have another crack at it.
Well, I mean, Cam wasn't a big part of the 16 team, but he was a part of the 19 team that goes to the super regionals. Matt was a huge part of the 16 team, wasn't at all involved in the 19 team that he was covering from Tommy John surgery. And so now there's a reason why these two opted to return, and Tyler Smith's in that group too, because they could sense what this group was capable of doing, and they wanted to be a part of one more run like this. And now not only are they a part of it, they are elemental to what this team is trying to do.
Yeah, to put it in perspective for how long 6 years is and how long they've been here. If you're Matt Bridges, for example, if you were 18 in 2016 when you got here, the 6 years prior to that, okay, 66 years ago was 2016. So the 6 years prior to 2016 was 2010. Matt Bridges was 12 years old and then middle school. So that's how long he's been here, that duration of time. So that's, you know, 6 years is a long time. And when you think back to that 2016 team and the Super Regional, that seems like forever ago down in Texas Tech and what they did at Virginia. And Bridges was part of that. And it's really weird. When I made the comment the other day, we had somebody on, I don't remember who it was. It was a midweek podcast. And I said, it seems like Matt Bridges has been here so long he played under Keith LeClair. And, the reason it has been a long time.
Yeah.
6 years is a long damn time.
Well, and think about with Cam Colmore, who his desire to play at East Carolina started when he was at the regional in 2009. He was in the jungle watching that walk off over South Carolina. That was 7 years before he started playing here. He's been here 6 years.
Yeah.
I mean, think about how long ago that is. Just add on one more. And that was the origin of Cam wanting to be a Pirate as well. So, I mean, they've spent a quarter of their lives playing baseball for East Carolina right now. And it'll end here in a couple of weeks, but they're going to be special parts of this program for years to come.
And I think they said it in the post-game press conference. I don't think this will ever be duplicated to have something like this because of the COVID year. You can see 5 years, obviously, but 6 years. Coach has talked many times about the importance of those guys. And, you know, Corey, as much as we hated about 2020, if there's a silver lining to have these guys to have the experience all the way back to the 16, they know what it's like to have a losing season. Like Coach talked about the post-game press conference this year, they know about the regionals. In other words, there's a good mix of talent, young talent, and you've got the guys that it seems like it's a recipe – a great recipe of going deep into the playoffs. We'll see how that plays out. I know it's a long time, but right now, looking at things at the current time, it feels like the team's still getting better and better. Hopefully we can get some more arms, younger arms, for them to get more experience. But certainly the bats are doing very well right now. As I've talked to coach today, I mean, 1 through 9, man, with the bats, that's one of the things I want to bring up to you today. I thought about this afternoon, 1 through 9, yesterday, I noticed that being in person is so much different than listening to it on the radio or on television on ESPN Plus or ECPirates.com. But to see those pitchers pitching around Norby, I was telling Bubba standing beside me, I'm like, okay, you pitch around Norby, pick your poison. You know, you've got like who are you? You can pitch around these guys, but eventually, if you pitch around them, there you're going to walk a whole bunch of people. You know, yes. You can't do that with this lineup.
No, and yeah, the lineup this weekend actually reshuffled a lot from game 1 to game 4. And I'm looking at today's game in front of me, and you have Moylan hitting 3rd in the lineup today, and he goes 500 for the weekend. He goes 7-14 and drove in a run, scored a run here today. Your RBI leader was hitting 7th today. Seth Cadell was hitting 7th. He was hitting 8th earlier on in this series, and he's also tied for the team high with home runs, with 12.
Home runs.
That's a joke. Like, if that's where your RBI leader is sitting and your home run leader is sitting, one of the best power threats in the conference is sitting, he's hitting in the bottom 3 of the order. Like, what do you do? Like and then right behind him today was Bryson Wuerl, who had a shaky game today offensively, but he homered in game 1, had a terrific start to this series, and he's hitting in the bottom 3 of the order. You have a guy like Zach Agnos, who has done what he's done in conference play. He's moved all around down the middle of the order, but then, all right, you pitch around him. Well, then Lane Hoover's going to drag a bunt on you, and he's going to sneak his way on. Like, it's just right now, this lineup is so dangerous. And you're right. Pitch around Norby. Doesn't get a hit today. 2 walks drawn. Well, he scores off of one of them because Francisco knocks him in. You get rid of Norby and you actually get him out. Well, 2 solo home runs for Francisco with 2 outs. Like, it just, it boggles the mind when this lineup is doing what their physical talent is capable of. And then mentally they are in it from the start to the finish. And I think that's, not just grabbing 3 wins this weekend, it's not just the biggest thing for Cliff Godwin. It's that it felt like every single inning of this weekend, with maybe a slight exception to Saturday night's a moment here or there, but they were in it. They were absolutely 100% in it. That they got back into first place. Now can they keep this going against a team that has seen them already before and has a lineup that it could be just as dangerous as East Carolina's?
We'll talk about that certainly in just a minute. We want to do our PGX player and pitcher of the game. Bubba, whichever one you want to put up there first. There we go. PGX player of the game is Thomas Francisco. Franny went 8 of 18. We were just talking about him. 2 home runs, 4 RBIs. He had 2 walks and only 1 strikeout. So congratulations to Thomas Francisco. Good old Franny. As our PGX player of the game, we'll get your thoughts on him, Corey.
It's a very solid choice. I think the key for him today was that pretty quickly Tyler Hoffman got 2 outs in the inning, and then there's Francisco to say you're not getting out of the frame on me just yet. And I think what made today even more impressive was that across the doubleheader, Francisco did not have a good day defensively. He dropped a line out double play. He threw wild to second on a pickoff attempt that should have been the final out of an inning. And so he got taken off the field today. He was the DH. And he just does this. And he just leads the team, grabs the first 3 runs of the game, and pushes this team in front for the series clinching victory. It's just, he's so damn steady. It's a marvel to watch. He's not as flashy as Norby, but what he does has just as much focus from professional scouts as what Norby's been able to do this year.
You remember back in 2019, I believe it. We'll get to our PGX pitcher of the week. But I remember Bryant Packer talking, I believe it was about Thomas Francisco, talking about how good of a swing he had 2 years ago in 2019. I think it was a regional or sometime in the regular season, but I'll never forget that. And I just made that mental note. And I thought about him this weekend about that.
Boy, the Pirates in recent years have had some pretty sweet left-handed swings. Packard is one of them. Brickhouse, one of them. But the Thomas Francisco swing, it's always in control, but then he can do it for power. Like, there were times where the term that Coach O would use, so there'd be times where Packard or Brickhouse on the left side would unbutton their shirt. They would just get way, they'd just try and throw a haymaker. That's not Thomas. He's not swinging heavy. It's just a smooth, clean swing. It reminds me, what one of my favorite swings to watch growing up, watching Major League Baseball, and it's a righty hitter, but this is kind of the comparison I think of here, was Paul Konerko. And the type of swing he had, that's the type of swing Francisco has, where everything's in control, nothing extra, and he's going to hit for power on you if you let him, like they did today.
Can we put that comment, Bubba, up from Tim Colmore? Let's put that up for Corey, because we think a lot of the Colmores, and we're just hoping that you have like five or six more kids that are playing baseball that will come in. I don't know if that's.
There's a younger brother. Yeah.
Okay. Great job, fellas. The Colmores love you, Corey. So for those listening to the podcast, Extra Innings, again, brought to you by Next Level Training Center. Appreciate the folks there in Greenville with Trent and Gaynell. They are so great to us. Appreciate them very much. But thank you so much. That let's go to the PGX Co-Pitchers of the Week. First for us here on the show. And, of course, we have to do that for the seniors, man. Matt Bridges, we've been talking a lot of them. And speaking of Tim, we have your son as one of the co-pitchers of the week for PGX, Cam Colmore. I mean, you're talking about all those, both those guys with innings pitched, the hits limited to Matt had one, four strikeouts, no walks. Cam had four and 4.1 innings pitched, and he had no runs, three hits, four strikeouts, and only one walk. I mean, those guys were throwing out of their mind. And you know, again, we appreciate them so much, and we—I don't think we'll appreciate them until we know that the whenever the season's over, we'll appreciate them even more. But right now, even in midst of their final season, man, those two guys—we had to give—we were arm wrestling, and we finally just decided instead of arm wrestling or rock paper scissors on which one to pick, we just like, you know, it's senior week. Both of those have. Those guys, we've already talked a lot of the show about their contributions, but how much Coach Godwin loves them for their contributions to the program on and off the field. And then with the performance this weekend, I mean, they were lights out.
Yeah, I totally agree with the choices there. They are the correct choices. Let me throw the other old man into this mix. We haven't talked about Tyler Smith a lot because – like Kyle said, the double headers kind of blend together, but he pitched really well to open up that double header, and that was right after the senior day festivities, and that was by design. Cliff Goddard wanted to put him out there right after the senior day festivities, and so I thought he pitched really well, especially when there's a lot to probably manage for him when it comes to the emotions there, what this journey has been for him, and getting his team into the fifth inning of that first game, what was a grind of a game. So I throw him into the mix. We've talked about Carter Spivey and how important his outing was today. It's hard to, you know, AJ Wilson, I thought was sensational in the loss Saturday night. And that's great stuff to see from him. And then, I mean, Gavin pretty much has the award named after him by this point. But, you know, if we're talking about the seniors, and he's technically in that group here, the four senior pitchers that were honored this weekend prior to Saturday's doubleheader, they all pitched their tails off this weekend.
No doubt. And before we let you go, obviously, let's talk about the Cincinnati series. I want to get your thoughts on, I know, on the road again for the Pirates the next 2 weeks. We have Cincinnati closing out the season with USF. Eight games left, obviously four this weekend coming up and four next weekend for USF. Both are away games. We know the Pirates, as Coach talked about in postgame today, 6-6 on the road this season. By the way, folks, if you want to see, we have the college baseball scoreboard. We're kind of running out of time, so we have that at the bottom of the screen for those watching live or obviously archived on Facebook Live, on our YouTube channel, or on Twitter. But Corey, as far as the Cincinnati series, what are your thoughts going into this week?
I remember that lineup was as challenging to maneuver through as any lineup that the Pirates have seen this year, and they've only gotten better since they came into Greenville back to start off league play. It's such an old, savvy lineup that you can't really throw a ton of tricks at them. They know what's coming, and they know how to handle it. They will move runners on you. They will try and slice and dice around the base paths and try and wreak havoc on pitching staffs. And, you know, the key for that weekend back at Clark Eau Claire was that they were throwing their ace, Evan Shauver, and he left very quickly due to an injury concern. He had not pitched until this past weekend when Cincinnati took on Houston. So if he is back in the mix, then that resets things for how Cincinnati can throw the ball at you. Their bullpen's weak, and it still remains weak. But if Shauver's back in the starting rotation, there's a lot more to combat with than what the Pirates saw a few weeks ago. Now getting Wisenhunt back helps maybe balance that out. Wisenhunt had a really good outing in Cincinnati. And then you have Gavin leading the rotation and what he's been able to do. But it's a lineup that poses a ton of veteran challenge. And it's going to be a grind to get through what Cincinnati's going to throw at them for four games.
And, of course, Cincinnati, we have USF, the last season series of the conference, the regular season. Let me ask you this really quick. We're not taking anything for granted with Cincinnati or USF, but we had folks on social media asking, so do you know how the pairings will stack out? It's hard to really say, but we had a Pirate fan that asked about the tournament in Clearwater. There's no way to know. It'll be announced in the next week or two, right? Obviously, we'll have to wait until all that shakes out.
Well, the format's not going to change in terms of what it has been. It's two sides of a bracket. You'll have 1v8 and then 4v5 on one side, then 2-7-3-6 on the other. And so, like, nothing is reformatted from what it has been. Now, the changes this year will be a lot more win percentage is going to come into play because the Pirates haven't played four games. Half the league hasn't played four games. Tulane and Wichita have not played five games. So win percentage is very much back in play, and it's going to be hard to, frankly, get tiebreakers sorted out because, you know, the Pirates split with the Shockers. Well, the Shockers have played three more games. And so it's, you know, it's stuff like that that probably won't be as much of an impact this year as it has been in the past. But the format, the bracket, as far as I've heard, has not changed from what it has been in years past.
Corey, do you have time for one more question? I just had a question to pop up on the board. So before we were getting ready to wrap it up, Chris, this is last call. This is the last question and comment. Thank you so much for a lot of people watching tonight. Obviously, Extra Innings brought to you by our Next Level Training Center. Christopher says, Miller, at a high level, can you record this seeding process? My understanding is they select 20. Is that they select 20 this week, but actual seeds will come later. Is this after conference tournaments?
Here's what I know about what is now in play this week. 20 schools will be announced as possible host sites, and it was originally going to be tomorrow, but now it seems as though that's being pushed back, but it should be later in this week when the 20 schools will be announced as teams that could potentially host. Once the season and the conference tournaments come to an end, four schools will be taken out of the mix, and you'll have your 16 sites. I don't know what's happening this year in terms of seeding. That the NCAA hasn't announced. I don't know if they're going to do a 1 through 16 like they have in the past, and then that will line up the super regionals, or if they're just going to announce, here are the 16 host sites, here are where teams are going, and here are the super regional sites. They have not announced that. Frankly, all we have to work off of is what D1 Baseball has been reporting. The NCAA hasn't actually said anything on their own. They've been in contact with schools, and they know more privately than we do publicly. And like East Carolina knows more about this than we do because they've submitted a bid and everything like that. But this week, the group of 20 will be announced. And then after the conference tournaments, that's Sunday night when you usually get the host teams announced. You get the 16 teams announced that Sunday night, and then Monday the bracket gets revealed, that Memorial Day Monday. So that's not really changing from where it has been in the past. The biggest difference is that we're going to know what the possibilities are coming up later this week. And East Carolina, with what they did this week, will assuredly be one of them.
And I want to remind fans, on Thursday night we have Mike Rooney of D1 Baseball. Runes is coming back on. He was on with us preseason. We'll have him on. And we actually are working on a really big guest that we don't have it finalized, but hopefully that'll be also for Thursday night. So a guest to be named later. So it's Rooney and a guest to be named later on. Coming up this weekend, though, I want to remind fans, Friday through Sunday, we'll have the four games against Cincinnati. That's on the road. It'll be the doubleheader on Friday with the game, the second game starting 45 minutes after the first game. Saturday will be at 4 o'clock. And of course, Sunday, the travel day, will be at 1 at UC Baseball Stadium. So, Corey, I take it you're going to be on the road again, my friend, like Willie Nelson.
I will be there. I am heading up to Cincinnati on Thursday.
All right. And maybe you can go by and visit WKRP and tell everybody, Johnny Fever and everybody, hello for me.
As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
There you go. Thank you, my friend. I know we've gone a little bit long tonight, but enjoying the Pirate. Soak it up. You did a great job, as always, my friend. I know that you, like yesterday, Saturday was a huge marathon for a broadcaster, and you make it look and sound so easy. So thank you, my friend, for all that you do for us, for Pirate Baseball, on behalf of everybody in Pirate Nation that loves baseball.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a joy bringing you the home games this year. Now I got a bunch of road games coming up, and hopefully after that, a few more home games.
No doubt. Well, good luck to you. Good luck to the Pirates this week. And we'll be back on, again, Fans Thursday night. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to Extra Innings, brought to you by our friends at Next Level Training Center in Greenville. Go by and see Trent and Gaynell and tell them you heard it here, and obviously watch it here as well. Until next time, go Pirates.
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night as we will once again talk East Carolina Pirate baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!